Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Tax Summonses and Improper Purposes Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 19, 2014, the Supreme Court issued its opinion in United States v. Clark. The question in this case is whether an unsupported allegation that the Internal Revenue Service issued a summons for an improper purpose entitles an opponent of the summons to an evidentiary hearing to question IRS officials about their reasons for issuing the summons. Justice Kagan delivered the opinion for a unanimous court, which held that an allegation of improper purpose does not entitle a taxpayer to examine IRS officials. Rather, the taxpayer may do so when he can point to specific facts or circumstances plausibly raising an inference of bad faith. The contrary decision of the 11th Circuit was vacated and the case remanded for further proceedings. To discuss the case, we have Kristen Gutting, who is an associate professor of law at the Charleston School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Gutting.
On June 19th, the United States Supreme Court, in a 9-page opinion, unanimously vacated and remanded the 11th Circuit decision in the United States v. Clark, which examined the issue of when is a party that accuses the IRS of issuing a summons for an improper purpose entitled to an evidentiary hearing. Over 50 years ago, in the pivotal case of Powell, the Supreme Court provided that in order to establish a prima facie case that the summons is valid, the government must simply show that, 1. The examination is being conducted for a legitimate purpose. 2. The information sought may be relevant to that purpose. 3. The IRS does not already possess the information being summoned. And 4. Any administrative steps required have been followed. In most cases, the IRS can satisfy this initial burden by having the investigating agent file an affidavit stating that the 4 Powell criteria have been satisfied. This is commonly known as a Powell affidavit. Afterwards, the burden shifts to the summons party to disprove any of the Powell elements. Additionally, the summons party has another option. The party can demonstrate that the summons had been issued for an improper purpose. In Clark, the recipients of the summonses, the respondents in the Supreme Court case, sought an evidentiary hearing so that they could question the IRS agent that issued the summonses regarding her motives, as they asserted that the summonses had been issued for an improper purpose. You see, in Clark, the IRS had been conducting an examination for the tax returns of Dynamo Holdings Limited Partnership for the 2005 through 2007 tax years. Generally, the IRS has 3 years from the date a return is filed to make an additional assessment. However, during the examination, Dynamo agreed to extend the statute of limitations on 2 separate occasions. Yet, in August 2010, as the extended statute of limitations was about to expire, the IRS asked Dynamo to extend the statute of limitations for a 3rd time. Dynamo refused. Soon after Dynamo's refusal to further extend the statute of limitations, the IRS issued summonses to 6 individuals associated with the partnership, but only 5 of those 6 individuals did not comply. Then, on December 8, 2010, with 3 days remaining in the statute of limitations period, the IRS issued a final partnership administrative adjustment, known as an FPAW, to the partnership. In February 2011, Dynamo challenged the IRS's FPAW in the United States Tax Court. In April 2011, 6 months after the return date for most of the summonses, the IRS sought enforcement of the unanswered summonses in the United States District Court of the Southern District of Florida. At the district court level, the respondents asserted the IRS has an improper purpose in issuing the summonses. The respondents asserted several specific reasons, including that the summonses were issued in retaliation for Dynamo refusing to extend the statute of limitations period for a 3rd time, and that the summonses were designed to circumvent the United States Tax Court's limitations on the scope of discovery. The respondents supported these allegations with the evidence that they had available to them without discovery, including an affidavit from the lawyer of the 6th summoned individual. The affidavit stated that the IRS interview was conducted exclusively by 2 lawyers representing the IRS in the tax court proceeding, and that the examining agent was not even in attendance. Accordingly, the respondents requested an evidentiary hearing to inquire into the purpose for issuing and enforcing the summonses. Ultimately, the district court ordered enforcement of the summonses. The 11th Circuit, in a very brief and unpublished opinion, vacated the district court's order enforcing the summonses and remanded for the district court to hold a hearing. In doing so, the 11th Circuit stated that a mere allegation of improper purpose is sufficient to trigger a limited hearing when the taxpayer may question the IRS officials concerning the service's reasons for issuing the summonses. The court stated that in situations such as this, requiring a taxpayer to provide factual support for an allegation of an improper purpose without giving the taxpayer a meaningful opportunity to be heard saddles a taxpayer with unreasonable circular burden, creating impermissible catch-22. Thus, the United States Supreme Court was confronted with determining the standard that a district court should apply in deciding if the summons party is entitled to a limited evidentiary hearing. In vacating and remanding the 11th Circuit's opinion, the court, in an opinion written by Justice Kagan, focused on two aspects. First, the court focused on the proper standard to apply when determining the threshold standard a summons party must meet to be granted an evidentiary hearing in a summons enforcement case. Second, the court emphasized the standard of review that the 11th Circuit should apply when reviewing the district court's decision. Moving on to the threshold standard, based on oral arguments, one thing that was apparent was that the Supreme Court's decision would not rely on the 11th Circuit's reasoning that a mere allegation of improper purpose is sufficient to trigger a limited evidentiary hearing. Thus, the court used this case to set the 11th Circuit straight on the proper threshold that should be used in granting an evidentiary hearing. The court stated that a bare allegation of improper purpose does not entitle a taxpayer to examine IRS officials. Instead, the taxpayer has the right to conduct the examination when he points to specific facts or circumstances plausibly raising an inference of bad faith. The court went on to state that naked allegations of improper purpose are not enough. The taxpayer must offer some credible evidence supporting his charge, but circumstantial evidence can suffice to meet the burden. Thus, the Supreme Court has made it clear that in order to be granted an evidentiary hearing in a summons enforcement case, the summons party must point to specific facts or circumstances, plausibly raising an inference of bad faith. The court then turned to the standard of review. The court cautioned the 11th Circuit that it must give appropriate deference to the district court's ruling. It then reminded the 11th Circuit that it reviews for abuse of discretion a trial court's decision to order or not the questioning of IRS agents. However, the court provided two caveats. First, the district court's decision is entitled to deference only if based on the correct legal standard. The court said it would leave it up to the 11th Circuit to decide if the district court asked and answered the relevant question, whether the respondents pointed to specific facts or circumstances, plausibly raising an inference of improper motive. Second, the court provided that the district court's latitude does not extend to legal issues about what counts as an improper motive. The court went on to discuss the respondent's claim that the government moved to enforce these summonses to gain an unfair advantage in tax court litigation, which the district court deemed irrelevant, stating that the validity of the summonses is judged at the time the IRS originally issued the summonses. The court also mentioned the respondent's alternative claim that the summonses enforcement was because the respondent declined to extend the statute of limitations for a third time. The Supreme Court then proceeded to punt on the improper motive issue, stating it was not within the question presented for the court's review. But the court did make clear that the improper motive issue was a pure question of law, so if the issue arises again on remand, the 11th Circuit has no cause to defer to the district court. In conclusion, the court's opinion in Clark provided practitioners and the IRS with the standard in determining if a summons party should be granted a limited evidentiary hearing in a summons enforcement, if specific facts or circumstances plausibly raise an inference of improper motive. While the court elaborated on this standard to some degree, making it clear that the direct evidence is not needed, as circumstantial evidence will suffice, room was still left open for some interpretation by the lower courts. Additionally, the holding put a slight damper on the IRS's ability to always blindly rely on a Powell affidavit when it comes to summonses enforcement. However, the court cautioned the lower courts against turning every summons dispute into a fishing expedition for official wrongdoing. Thus, the Powell affidavit will probably still suffice 99.9% of the time. The court's decision also did leave open a few questions, including the question of whether the court can only look to the facts and circumstances that existed at the time of the summonses was issued, or if instead the court can also look to facts and circumstances that existed after the summonses was issued, in determining if specific facts or circumstances plausibly raise an inference of improper motive. Specifically in this case, whether the issuance of a summons to circumvent tax court discovery rules is an improper purpose when the summons was issued prior to the summons party docketing the case in tax court. Also, the court left open the issue of whether the issuance of a summons in retaliation for refusal to extend a statute of limitations is an improper purpose. So stay tuned as the courts hopefully further develop the law on these issues.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.